All right. Good evening, everyone.
Hello.
We've got the 8-Bit Duke. Corey is doing some traveling and might be able to stop in the chat later. But, we realize tonight's probably going to be a low attendance tonight. What with, you know, Super Bowl and all that stuff. But
alternative programming.
Yeah. I ain't going to stop us from messing around with some video games. So thanks for coming along, Duke.
Oh, I'm glad you know. Try you can contact me 5 minutes before you do these things. I'm always here for you, man.
All right. Well, it looks like I dropped a few frames, but it doesn't look like anything super severe. So hopefully it goes well. So let me go ahead and just bring it full screen. This is the NT Mini, the analog NT Mini. Which you might know about. It is the
the Nintendo you can buy if you have a really good credit score.
Yeah.
Right.
Yes. So they sent us a review unit. It was actually we got it maybe 2 weeks before it shipped, and we weren't allowed to say anything until it actually shipped out to everyone else. But they were encouraging us to not do a video on it until after there was some big announcement. They wouldn't tell us what it was. And as it turned out, that big announcement was that Kevtris, who is the guy who they contracted to configure the FPGA that runs the NT Mini, and he made the high-def NES, he has made his own jailbroken firmware, which is indicated by the little skull and crossbones at the top of the menu there. He has released his own jailbroken firmware that Analog doesn't care one bit or the other if you use it. So this is like almost kind of like official unofficial jailbroken firmware. This is jailbroken firmware made by the guy who made the thing.
This is an inside job.
Yeah, exactly. An inside job, and they don't care. In fact, they told me that I shouldn't even review the thing until this thing happens that is not their official announcement. So it's kind of crazy. To kind of explain FPGA to people who might not understand it, because I don't really fully understand it that well myself. I didn't really know about it until a year or so ago. It's basically just, you know, a circuit that can be highly customized. You can, you know, sort of bend it to your will to do the specific functions that you want it to do. For example, high-def NES that Kevtris also made, the mod for the HDMI mod for the NES. That is a FPGA at its heart. And you can also use FPGAs, if they are, a certain type, to run essentially exactly like another piece of hardware. So the FPGA that is in the NT Mini is able to basically just be an NES. But the interesting thing is, Kevtris, this FPGA stuff has really only been widely accessible pretty recently, to where you could just make a bunch of these and it'd be relatively affordable. Relatively being the relative term. But he's been doing this stuff for like well over a decade, making FPGA cores, kind of like emulator cores, except it's made to run on hardware rather than through a software layer. He's been making these for, 8-bit consoles and other consoles for over a decade.
And I had no idea that these little FPGA things were a decade old or anything similar like that existed, because really, I think is when you guys mentioned them the first time a couple videos ago, was really the first time I even knew that they were a thing. Like the OSSC, I think, FPGAs too, the SD2 SNES Everdrive thing, like, those were the first times I ever heard of them.
Yeah. I mean, same here. It's kind of crazy. So he's already got this stuff made for this huge list of 8-bit consoles. Half of them I hardly know anything about. There's a portable system called GameMate. And hardly never anyone knows or cares about it, but guess what? He's made a hardware recreation of it, a hardware core to run on these things. He's done in television, ColecoVision, Sega Master System, Game Gear. Hopefully he's going to, his plan is he is going to release these cores. He releases basic jailbroken firmware, on Friday. And then one a week, he's going to port these cores over to the NT Mini. There's a little work that has to be done, but for all intents and purposes, they're ready to run on this type of FPGA. And so he's going to be working on pouring those over. Some may take more work, some may take less work, but hopefully I'll be able to try out one or two of those cores before the episode and actually show them off. And more than that, he is intending to hopefully create cartridge slot adapters for the NT Mini. You can plug in your Intellivision cartridge or your ColecoVision cartridge or your Master System cartridge or all these other 8-bit consoles and dump your ROMs yourself. Actually play the cartridge directly. So this is like kind of a really big deal. Like Analog NT Mini, great quality, has all these awesome video settings, but it's kind of like, I've played a million other NES things that look pretty darn awesome. And then this kind of changes everything because all of a sudden you realize, oh wait, I've got a lot more than an NES on my hands. I've got, for one, I don't even need an EverDrive to launch other ROMs for cartridges I don't have if I wanted to do that. I don't have a Game Gear. I can play Game Gear games on this thing. I mean, there's, my ColecoVision, isn't really set up. Atari, I don't have an RGB mod for it, So, I mean, huge convenience for some of these more obscure 8-bit systems really just blows open the doors for this. Apparently, the NT Mini itself is not powerful enough to run 16-bit FPGA cores, but it's been Kevtris's plan for quite a long time to make something he calls the Zimba 3000, which would be kind of this all-in-one system where you could just flip the cores in it to be NES or to be TurboGrafx-16 or to be Super Nintendo or Atari or whatever. It sounds like that may still be quite a ways off. So this is almost kind of like a preview of that. This is the 8-bit version of that. It's pretty crazy. It feels like we're kind of on the cusp of stuff like this could be the future of retro gaming. I mean, the original hardware, I like to believe that it's going to, last me my lifetime, but it's important work that's being done to preserve these things on at least beyond a emulated level. This is a hardware simulated level. So this is pretty huge stuff.
It's impressive. I mean, just emulation alone is impressive. But yeah, as you've mentioned a lot, that's at a software level half the time. And then when we start bringing the hardware into it to mimic it or trick it, you get an experience that's, it's the real thing. You'd be hard pressed to tell the difference, I think.
Yeah. And something, I don't know how accurate this really is because, I don't understand the inner workings of this stuff. And you know a heck of a lot more about emulation than I do. But it was I saw it described recently, I want to say, that for emulation, you just have to know how to recreate the outward what's the word I'm looking for? The outward appearance of what the system is doing. Whereas with FPGA, you have to recreate how it is actually working inside. So I don't know if that makes sense, but anyway, I've got, this is actually a Famicom Super Mario Brothers cartridge that is running in the background here. The reason I'm doing that is because when you are in this jailbroken firmware, when you are in the mode where you can just launch ROMs without an EverDrive, which, by the way, this does work with the EverDrive. And at first, I was just going to play some random EverDrive games. At first, I was thinking I was just going to play on my NES. Now, I thought, you know, people are going to be interested in this jailbroken NT firmware thing. So,
and I think it's worth pointing out for people who just kind of tuned in that this is right now, this FPGA solution only works on this unit, the Analog NT Mini, and it's only working for 8-bit games as he figures them out.
Because it doesn't
have enough power to run Super Nintendo, Sega Genesis, 16-bit stuff.
Right, so he's already made 8-bit FPGA cores. He's just going to try to port roughly one a week to the NT Mini.
For a bunch of systems that we've never heard of.
So no other systems are available yet, and I'm hoping, I'm hoping to get a video out in about 2 weeks. That's my goal, and hopefully by then I'll be able to use a core that will run stuff like Master System, Game Gear, and maybe be able to use some others. We'll see what his progress is, but that's what I'm hoping. That'd be an amazing thing to be able to show, because that completely changes my perspective on what this system really is. And I think for a lot of people will really change the value proposition of the whole thing too. It's kind of crazy. So the reason I'm running the Super Mario Brothers cartridge right here is because I kind of wanted to show just briefly the settings. I don't want to spoil too much of our video. I've been working on the script for it all weekend. Video settings, you'll recognize this menu as being very similar to the high-def NES if you've used one, or the first Analog NT, or if you saw our video on the high-def NES. Very similar menu. Obviously, it's Kevtris is doing. but there are expanded options. The high-def NES, it just does not have enough power to do a 5x scale for 1080p, 5x vertical scale, which does cut off some overscan. You can see here, you've got the 4x and the 4.5x. Definitely do not recommend the 4.5x. But the 5x is awesome. That's what I use on the FrameMeister. It does cut off that overscan. I believe the default puts it at like 16 maybe, which, as you can see there, that puts the Mario HUD very close to the top. So I've been playing it down at 12, which for most games seems to work really well. And the other big deal is you can adjust the horizontal scale. 5x would be your typical sort of emulator aspect, but then you go to 6x, not quite the correct NES aspect ratio, but it's really close. It's close enough to where, once I start playing, I don't think about the fact that it's just a little too fat.
Put Mario on that slim fast.
Yeah.
Get it back to that 5X scale.
You got usual cropping and stuff. Now here's what I love. Firebrand X, I've been a huge proponent of his palette work for a while now, and that's not the true correct title of his palettes. He's actually got like 4 palettes now. So
is he a person or a palette? That's, now I'm confused.
I mean, he might be a palette.
He might be a palette person
at this point. But you've got, you've also got, so that's the default. That palette is based on carefully calibrated direct capture of all the colors an NES can make through its composite video port, and then, sampled and put into this. So this is intended to be just like what a North American front-loader Super Nintendo would output. But then these other palettes were also things that were available on the high-def NES, are available on the high-def NES. But then here's the cool thing. You get custom. You can load custom palette. My files may not be on here. I think the one, let's see. Oh no, unfortunately, because I copied all the stuff off of Corey's EverDrive SD card, and I put it on the SD card that I put in the NT Mini now. I don't have my palettes that I put on there, but like, for example, Firebrand X has made a palette based on the NES Classic Edition. So that's like kind of like the new official NES palette. And I prefer his direct capture palette, but it is a really good looking palette, the NES Classic.
I really like the FCE UX one because of my emulator experience. It's kind of the color I really associate with the NES. And it's not like offensively different from one.
No,
but it's the play choice 10 one is like too saturated.
Yeah, it's crazy. Well, and because it's got that like true yellow.
Yeah,
like, and it's an ugly yellow.
And you know the NES doesn't do yellow very well, but the Play Choice 10 was like, yeah, forget yellow.
Yeah, I mean it's.
Ugh.
Yeah, this is rough.
But it's like eggshell yellow. Like, I don't know.
Yeah,
it's weird about it.
It is not right. So you can bring up the menu while you're playing and see the changes that you make immediately, which I think is really cool what the AVS did, which was its menu system is an NES ROM. Which, I mean, I just think that's really cool. Like, you could, I believe in theory, load that ROM onto a flash drive and, you know, you could navigate.
Dump it onto a real ROM card.
Yeah, you could navigate a pretend AVS menu system, but it wouldn't do anything because those settings are, you know, are meant to affect how the games appear.
Which is interesting that a ROM can, you know, basically command information that way.
It's an
interesting feat of programming.
It is an NES game for all intents and purposes that is operating how that works. So it is pretty interesting.
It's witchcraft. Yeah. So what I think all this.
But it is definitely very handy that you can see how this actually, changes. You know, if I want to go to the cropping menu and, adjust my left crop, there I can see it in real time. So that's
So the real question here for people curious about the analog NT, how's the input lag? With all this fancy stuff it's doing internally with these FPGAs, how's that jump response?
I mean it's supposed to be no inherent lag, as far as I understand. I'm looking at it on the HDTV. I have not done a whole lot of analog stuff with it yet. I'm kind of to that point in the script, so I need to double check a few things with that. And that is kind of one of the cool things about this system, is it's like with real NES hardware, an NES RGB mod and a high def NES mod cannot exist in the same NES. Likewise, they cannot exist in the original analog NT. The AVS is HDMI output only. And this, you don't have to make that choice. You can't use them at the same time. And I was actually kind of confused and believed that you could, which would be really neat. But you can't. It's analog or HDMI only at one time, but at least you don't have to make a choice on the system. The system itself is capable of both.
I suppose you could strip the HDMI output through a splitter into some sort of down converter thingamabob.
Yeah,
but then I'm sure that introduces something.
Well, and then it's going to be a letterboxed, full 16:9. It wouldn't work that well. Of course, you can take the analog and just run through the FrameMeister, but obviously you're going to get a sharper picture doing the native HDMI output.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah.
The point is you have options.
Yeah.
But you can't have all the options in one Nintendo.
Yeah, yeah. So
it ain't gonna work like that.
Yeah. So, but I mean, the input lag, as far as I understand, I mean, this is theoretically lagless. It just depends on how your display is handling it. But I will admit I'm not especially sensitive to input lag. But
yeah, I don't know if I'm not either. I know when Corey got his Raspberry Pi 3 and was playing around with a lot of it, and he mentioned some stuff with input lag, and either I am just completely oblivious to it, or something, because I was like, I never really noticed it. I can play through stuff really well, but maybe when I go back and play an actual NES, I'm gonna be like, yeah, why can't I play Mario, right? I'm jumping too early.
Yeah. And that's happened to me. But I adapt easily, I think. Like, you know, I'm just like, oh, okay, I just get used to this jump feeling a little sticky.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back on this jailbroken menu, there's this copy NES, which has this dump cartridge functionality, and you got like choose mappers, and I don't quite understand what to do. I attempted to dump the Mario Kart because I assumed that would be pretty simple, but don't quite know nothing about that. But I want to, because I would love, that would be huge to me. Like just I like the idea of dumping your own ROM. And, yeah, you know, if I were to take my Famicom games and dump my own game and apply my own patch and then play them through here on this, like, you know, for apply my own translation patch, that'd be amazing to me. I would be so huge into that.
It'd be a little bit more authentic than what the Retron 5 does for your translation patches.
Yeah, I think so. So that's something that I want to figure out, that ROM dumping. But I need to look into it a little bit more. It's a little mysterious to me. But let's go into the cores menu. So there's a music player. And then, you know, I think I could load other cores and they would, I believe, appear on this menu. Right now, the only core is the NES Famicom.
So with the music player, is that like playing like those
NSF files?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and it's actually
it's
pretty neat. I don't think I've got any loaded on here right now, but it shows like these lines that have all of the whatever's the synth thingers. I don't know.
Them music lines.
The music lines. And it actually shows like this like little sparkle, like where it hits and how strong it hits, and it's actually kind of an interesting visualization.
Wow.
So I'm going to load the NES Famicom core, and this is, you know, this I literally copied this stuff off of Corey's EverDrive card. So, you know, I'm just gonna play something random,
which is nicely organized. I mean,
yeah. Well, it's what is it called? Smoke Monster is the pack they use. You know what? I've never played Contra Force. I've never played Contra Force.
I've barely played Contra.
I'm going to play Contra Force right now.
I didn't grow up with the old
Neo
NES.
City 1992.
I hope that, like, was a good year.
This is
for Neo City.
It is, as far as I understand, not a Contra game. It was kind of repurposed into one before releasing. I've generally heard bad things, but it's also kind of like it gets a bad rap because it's not a real Contra game. So I feel like it can't be that bad. It's one of those expensive NES games.
Oh, one of those bourgeoisie NES games. I see. One of those fancy ones.
Well, let's go with the default guy. He's got what looks like a machine gun, so.
Beans.
So kind of like change guns. Oh, no. These guys have no use. So can I, like, how do, can you, like, change guns? There's like this almost like Gradius looking like
yeah, like you get to select a power up on maybe the bottom, as you find
yeah.
them. Yeah.
This feels like weird.
Does it feel like Contra?
It
doesn't look like
it feels
it looks too slow.
It's to slow, be yeah. It's just like this weirdly slow thing.
But official ROM hacks. This is Doki Doki Panic all over again.
I mean, I guess it's possible that you know, maybe the NT Mini doesn't run this game very well, but everything else I've tried has worked well, or it could be something with how it you know is playing off of the loaded ROM. But I don't know. Maybe it is just this way. I have no idea.
Hmm.
But it does feel a little not amazing. I mean, it feels like not a horrible game or anything, but it certainly feels lackluster compared to Contra.
Yeah, I mean, it looks unoffensive.
yeah.
But, you know, I've never been very good at these kind of games, and you know, I've never done very well with a game like Contra or anything like that. But I think the only like side scroller like shoot 'em and punch 'em game that I like got pretty good at on the NES was like Shatterhand and stuff like that.
Oh, Shatterhand is good.
I love Shatterhand. Totally Rad's fun. I like that game.
Yeah, so that game's not too impressive. So I can bring that ROM menu just right back up. It looked like I went through a spat of dropping a lot of frames, but it looks like I might be okay now.
I'm watching this in 144p.
Uh-oh.
Just because of all the, you know, being on Skype and being on YouTube, Time Warner is probably like, hey now.
Yeah, I don't think I've played Darkwing Duck before.
Now I've got my cat hanging up here, conveniently conveniently cropped out of the frame, wanting to chew on my posters. You can't be on the stream, kitty.
I've been meaning to kind of look out for this game because you know.
Isn't this kind of like a Mega Man?
I think it kind of is. You know, it's just. Good old Capcom Disney game. You know you can expect something pretty good.
you know you can expect something of quality.
Yeah. And by the way, the NT Mini actually came with a retro receiver and the NES, what do they call it? The NES 30, I think it's called.
The one without the sticks?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the 30. The 30 Pro is the one with the sticks. Which is the one I have. And I like it, but I'm starting to really feel definitely that, like, I have adult man hands, and it's a little too small. Yeah, I mean, this you know, he's shooting things, he's jumping, can he shoot up? Because that's like the Mega Man. That's like the Mega Man litmus test right there.
Oh, he can crouch and shoot. That's advanced. Well,
obviously, he would outperform Mega Man in a Buster duel.
Yeah, he can't. It doesn't seem like he shoots up. Like he pulls up his cape, maybe it, like deflects or something.
Does it take hearts to do, you know, throw knives? Is this like also like a Castlevania ripoff too, if you hold up?
Oh, okay, if I hit select he like has a different gun. How do I okay, he can grab onto like the bottom of these platforms. Oops.
This is why I'm no good at these early Nintendo games.
I think this is
too complicated. There's not enough mouse cursor action for me.
I do think this is a later game though. Maybe?
Yeah, I think it said 1992 on the title screen.
Yeah. Because Darkwing Duck was definitely more of a 90s thing, I think.
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I knew it as a kid.
Yeah, I wasn't really watching the Disney Channel or whatever the channel was at that time. I wasn't really watching it anymore, but, you know, I was like DuckTales and Chip and Dale. That was my heyday.
That was your jam. I mean, from what I can tell, you know,
look at this corridor. This is like where the checkpoint in every Mega Man level is.
That's what I think. I don't remember where I heard it. Maybe it was, like an AVGN video, because I know he did a video on this game. But like, it's something that's supposed to be like this was could have been a Mega Man game, and then they're like, nah, let's put a duck in it.
I could.
It's like that is that green guy is Sniper Joe.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
He's
basically,
he's got the full shield. He's green. I think Sniper Joe's almost always green.
Yeah.
But I was gonna say everything looks like, I don't know, correct. It looks, it sounds pretty good.
The sound feels a little muffled to me compared to a real NES. And right now there's a really serious issue with Famicom Disk System expansion audio. Analog tells me, that can be fixed, but it's going to take some work.
TLC.
The disk system stuff sounds weird. Like, not every disk system game uses expansion audio, but a lot do. Expansion audio stuff probably isn't a big deal for most people, but expansion audio sounds fine on Castlevania 3 to me.
I think that's my preferred like way to listen to
it. Yeah, to me anyway. But I mean, it's a different expansion audio track or whatever. I'm not too good on the technical aspects of how the expansion audio stuff works, but FDS in particular does not sound right, so I'm hoping that can be worked on. Like I said, the audio, I mean, it sounds good. I think without direct reference, you'd think, oh, this, you know, sounds just like NES, but it sounds just a bit muffled to me. But maybe it's just because I play too much NES. But everything else, like otherwise, like, I mean, as far as how the games play, I mean, I have not.
It's accurate.
I have not noticed anything.
Chocolate Brownie in the chat is asking if we have ever played Mega Man ZX, which I thought was the one on the Game Boy Advance, and they pointed out that that's Mega Man Zero, and I've only played one of those. Have you? What's your Mega Man post X experience?
I've played all of the Zero games. Zero One is very cool.
I liked it. I liked the whole premise of it, for sure.
Zero Two is garbage. Zero.
You know a game is bad when Tri says something that, you know,
it's bad. It's got it's got this grappling hook mechanic that does not work at all. Oops.
I haven't played that one. And I didn't even is ZX, is that like a DS one? Because I knew they made more. I just thought they were the same. I thought it was all Mega Man Zero.
But they made two ZX games. But yeah, the ZX or Zero 3 is fine, but a bit boring. And Zero 4 is pretty good. The thing I liked most about Zero 1 was it just kind of bucked the old Mega Man structure. And the rest of the Zero games just, you know, fell back into the, oh, let's fight the 8 bosses. There's nothing wrong with that, but it's just that Zero kind of tried to do something unique, and I thought that was kind of cool.
Yeah. I remember liking the first one. I'll have to check out, you know, ZX and the other ones. I'm terrible at Mega Man, so.
Yeah, ZX, I only learned a few months ago. Apparently that's like a Metroidvania-style game, and I had no idea.
I'm into that. I do love me some Castlevania mixed with some Metroids.
Yeah, yeah.
I suck at Metroid, but I love Castlevania when they make it play like Metroid. I just beat Aria of Sorrow again.
Oh.
I don't know, like a month ago or whatever, but I did it in like a 2 days or whatever, because it's like I remembered everything. Like, I need to get these souls, I need to do this to get the good ending and all that.
What the heck is Dryer?
Dryer.
D-R-I-A-R. I don't know what it is, but I'm going to play it. Oh, it has a bad header.
Oh, what a shame. Guess you're not finding that out.
Oh, Felix the Cat. I want to try that. I've heard that is a pretty interesting game.
Oh, yeah. Is Conquest of the Crystal Palace on there? I like that game.
Yeah, I've got that. That is an interesting game. It's kind of got this weird thing where when you slash your sword, you like drop like a rock as soon as you hit the B button. Mm-hmm. But it's a good game. I'm actually going to use it specifically as an example in the episode, because it's got this selection thing. Like, the selecting of the game is real weird. You have to hold like down and A to like select things.
It's really confusing if you've never done it before.
Yeah. But it's kind of near, it's really kind of in the overscan or right at the edge of the overscan. And if you use the 5X, that gets cut out. Mm-hmm. I'm kind of digging that demo. Let's see, this is a 92 Super Nintendo game. I know very little about Felix the Cat. I don't really remember watching much of the cartoons or anything.
No, he's a bit, I mean, he's a significantly older cartoon, I think, than... You know, I mean, we had Rocky and Bullwinkle on the NES. You can have Felix the Cat, but, you know, Rocky and Bullwinkle was like the Cold War in a cartoon. Felix the Cat's got a little bit more, you know, fun in it.
It's like a good-looking game.
I think anything that came out this late in the NES, like, they knew the hardware. I mean, look at everything that, like, Technos did. I mean, those games look beautiful. I mean, Crashing the Boys, that's got some cool scrolling in it. I think that was 92 or 93. Maybe it was later. I don't know.
Got some sort of crazy, like, burst, magic burst attack now.
Oh, that's like the shield from Mega Man?
That was a major, spring.
How egotistical is this guy that he's got to have his names in the clouds? Like a Felix.
The
Felix,
doctor guy is in the cloud, too.
Ugh. Just narcissism, the NES game. At least Dr. Wily just put his freaking initials everywhere.
This magic attack, magic star attack, is kind of weird. I think the punching bag was easier to use. Kind of like just switch back to it. Oh, I think like I had like a whole like life for that magic attack, because it had like hearts. Oh no.
And now you're back to the bag, huh? Or the puncher.
Oh, I think I'm back at the beginning of the level, maybe.
So, a follow-up Mega Man question from Chocolate Brownie is, what do we think of Mega Man X4 through X6 on the PlayStation? And, back then, if a game had voice acting, I thought it was cool that it had it. I wasn't really capable of, like, judging what was good or bad. So I remember really liking it, because I was like, wow, this is what Mega Man sounds like. And then I heard Mega Man 8, and I was like, I like X much better. But as far as the games go, I really like all X4, 5, and 6. I thought they were great.
Really?
Yeah, you got to remember, I'm not very good at Mega Man, nor I never played 3 on the SNES, I think.
Okay.
I played 1 and 2, 4, 5, and 6, and then whatever one's on the PlayStation 2 where it gets all funky with the new guy with the dual guns, 7, I think, or 7 or 8, I don't know. Then I played the RPG, good old Command Mission.
I have not played that yet. I haven't played it yet.
Oh, I've played it. My brother's like completed it. Like he like got like as powerful as you can get in it, and it just got way too repetitive for me and boring. But you want to talk about bad voice acting in the Mega Man series? You'd find it in Command Mission.
Oh man, I'm looking forward to that. Then I do enjoy me a good bit of bad voice acting.
Mega Man, you're gonna get Dr. Wily.
But for me, Mega Man. Whoa!
Mega Man, whoa! What did your B button do, or what?
It just says bow.
I'm waiting for the picture to catch up so I can know what you're talking about.
This makes my B button go bow.
It's kind of like, you ever play Wacky Races on the NES?
You get that. I don't think so.
You play as Muttley.
Oh no!
And you get a bark attack that says bow, and it just like shoots the words out of your mouth. Bow.
Yeah,
Saturn. That's one of those games that you emulate because I guess it's like super expensive.
Yeah. Well, speaking of games you emulate because they're super expensive, but Bomberman Saturn has this dragon. That when you or dinosaur when you ride it, it goes boo. It says B U U U U, just like out of its mouth, and that's like what if you hit the enemies with your boo, it gets them.
Maybe that's a Japanese thing. So our friend and yours, Gilly the Kid, says that each heart in Felix is its own power up tier. That's how you get the fancy stuff.
No, I died. I kind of want to keep playing. This game's pretty good.
Mega Man Battle Network, 3 White was actually the game I used to test my new Game Boy Advance 101 today, that I bought yesterday. And I've been sitting on. I used to really love the Battle Network Game Boy games. I played through. I think I gave up on 3. I think that was when I like just you know I was getting to that point where I was not playing Game Boy Advance as much anymore, so I didn't even know that like 3 had different versions of it because I remembered 1 and 2, and then I bought Network 3 White years ago and just now played it, and I was like, oh, it's why they put colors in. This is a Pokemon.
Well, I got the car back.
Oh, this game's a Mario ripoff because you're going into these bags like warp pipes. Sorry, but I can't stand for this.
Yeah, for me, the only X games that I really like are 1 and 2. 3, I think like it just been like kind of hyped up in my mind because I just hadn't played. And
sequels have a tendency to do that, I think.
Yeah, and that's when
the next one's always going to be better.
Yeah, when I finally played it on the Mega Man X collection, I was like, oh, like half of the bosses are something water related. Like you've got like a crawfish and a crab in the same game. I might be exaggerating. That's not exactly what they are, I think. But whoa, I just got a tank.
A crawfish sounds like it was like a great like,
I'm pretty
like
sure
first RPG boss kind of thing. You in the crick, you got to fight the crawfish.
I can't quite remember what all the bosses were in that one, but I don't know. I thought it was a little disappointing. And then X4 is fine, but I thought a little boring. Like, it was just, like, shockingly easy for a Mega Man game.
It is pretty easy.
Whoa, I've got a parasol now. Oh, look at this! Got some, like, Yoshi leg-wiggling action. Oh! This game's, like, really good, you guys.
Felix, my life in gaming before and after Felix the Cat. Mega Man's on the chat's mind.
I'm in a hot air balloon and I'm throwing baguettes at people. That's
Triforce 2017. Hotter than a hot air balloon throwing baguettes.
This is great.
That's a waste of good bread. Yeah, I don't know if you'd want to eat it, though, if it's, like, killing cannons.
I'm going to get my baguettes back. Yes. This game's, like, really good. Like, I think it's pretty expensive. Whoa.
I imagine.
Oh, I'm in an airplane now. And I'm shooting. I think I'm shooting science side up eggs.
I think you're right. I think for the NES, like almost anything that came out, you know, this late in it, this like post SNES time, is probably pretty expensive. I mean, they didn't sell as many, of course, I'm imagining.
Yeah, I saw this for like $30 a year and a half, 2 years ago.
I'd pay $30 for this.
Yeah, I would too, but I hadn't, you know, I didn't really know what it was like. I hadn't played it now. Now I would have bought that now. I don't know what it is now.
I feel like this could be Magician. NES
well,
too.
You know, we can try that because you intrigued me.
Yes,
with that.
Oh man!
Because you showed me that video and the guy had like three frames in his walk cycle, and I'm like, holy crap!
Yeah, that's an interesting little game, and I really like it. I know it's probably trash for some people, but I don't know. I've got a soft spot for it. But I've only ever emulated it. You know, I've never actually seen the actual cartridge or anything. I know somebody on Twitter had sent a thing saying that they'd offer to, you know, pick it up for me. I was like, I couldn't do that. But I wouldn't want to, you know, take somebody's time like that. But, you know, for something I couldn't afford at the time anyway. But still, it's out there.
Yeah.
Somebody's got it. So Gidley says this game's about $75 now, give or take,
okay,
and that so there's a Game Boy version.
Really? Is it good? Is it expensive?
he says it's pricey. I'm going to assume it's probably not as vibrant and colorful as the NES one.
This game's really good, though. I don't quite understand what makes the hearts appear, but yeah, this is really good. Let's go back to this menu. Let's go in the folder that would have Magician in it. There it is. Oh, that's an interesting title screen.
Yeah.
Man, this is 1999. Eurocom. Okay, Eurocom, I want to say they made some, like, good middling N64 games. Like they did, I want to say Cruisin' World and Cruisin' Exotica, maybe? And, which are great games, by the way. Not middling great. The world is not enough.
Which
was, you know, kind of a big deal at the time because, you know, people were, even though Tomorrow Never Dies on PlayStation was not good, as I understand, people were still kind of sore over the whole thing. You know, the we didn't get like this amazing direct sequel to GoldenEye, basically. After Rare wasn't making another Bond game. And then The World's Not Enough came around and it's like, hey, you know, it's pretty good. It's not as good, but it's pretty good. This is the land of Merlwood. Quest will be hard and hazardous, filled with magic and epic battles.
I'm sure you saw, you know, the demo kind of run a little bit there. But there are you have 15 saves. Let's, you can save pretty much any time, and
I think my A button is one hand, and the other button is because I feel that I seem to be drinking a flask when I hit the B button, and that's probably bad.
Yeah. So while you're walking around, your A button is magic. Your B button is your item. So in a way, it is one hand or the other. Okay. In the menu you can see you have all these stats. So you've got, you know, your hunger, your food, your you know, thirst, your water. You're going to want to keep those up as much as you can, because things as you go through the levels are going to drain those things. As you move around, you're going to get hungry, or as you get attacked, you're going to get, you know, health taken away from you. This is not the game that you can just casually go through. Yeah. It's very much a trial and error kind of game.
Yul Gil, look at that.
But you can go into a lot of the buildings and you can talk to people, and you have like a crap ton of money when you start off. So you can buy a bunch of stuff. It's not an easy game, but there's something very charming about it. I don't know if it's the way it looks or...
Definitely the way it looks has something to do with it. It's like just, it's a good looking game.
Yeah.
And it looks like a game that would be like a port of a PC game, but I don't think it is.
Yeah, but it isn't. This is a 100% an NES game, I'm pretty sure. You can talk to people also, if you push up, just like you're going through the doors. But not everyone says anything. Some people you got to try a couple times. But some people will attack you. You need to equip a spell to actually fight back, because you don't use weapons in this game. It's all magic. And you can equip a spell by a menu, but you can buy some spells first. So you're eventually come across a magic shop here.
Well, here's the old shop. All right, what we got? Is that salad?
Yes.
These vegetables will cost you 10 gold.
I don't know if it shows you off the top of my head, if it shows you how much gold you have, but you've got a crap ton.
Yeah, it's quite a bit. I want to buy this meat.
Oh yeah, it says it there.
This
ham
will cost you 30 gold. Worth it.
And you can carry a bunch of each thing.
Yul Mail. Yeah,
I think that guy gives you a quest.
Which guy?
The male guy. I'm pretty sure, yeah. Well, maybe I think there's a quest. You have to deliver a letter for somebody. That's it.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's the colors are interesting. The animation's interesting. The music's really good.
I like when NES games have like a very earthy sort of tone, like Fasanadu is a good example.
Yes, I love Fasanadu.
You know, there's just, I feel like NES games don't try to really go for a tone or a mood with their color palettes very often, but when they do, it's very interesting. Yeah, it cost me 10 gold, yeah. Sunglasses. What am I going to do with those? I don't know, but I'm buying them.
That's pretty much a good idea here.
Well, this walking stick is expensive. I might have to think about this. 300 gold.
I'm trying to remember what the stick does.
I don't know, but I'm buying it. Let's see. What is this? This scroll. Fireball will cost 60 gold. All right. Now, do I just buy one of those and I can use it forever? Or?
Pretty much, yeah. And I think in some cases you'll find some of these scrolls, or you can make them yourself by going into the menu, and you've got those different runes.
Yeah.
That's kind of how you decide what kind of magic.
Oh, I see. So could you make up magic in theory?
I mean, it's you'll never make a spell that like doesn't exist, you know, that, you know, you can't like combine poison with fire or something
right,
like
but
that.
If I knew that fire was, I guess, Fistmira,
roots.
Then yeah. I could have made that without buying it.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's what that third row is. Those are like the...
So what's this one, two, three, and four on the center thing?
That, I believe, if I remember right, is like your strength of the magic. Four being stronger attack or something, but it costs a lot more mana.
So
you have like 64 out of 200 possible mana right now, so you wouldn't want to go throwing around a bunch of four level spells. That would be bad.
This letter to my brother?
Yeah, so you can go back to that post office and you can post that letter for him.
This game just is intriguing.
It really is. I like I said, I've never actually beaten it because it's hard. But it is. I don't know. It's just fascinating to just kind of chill with.
Yeah, and it's not a game anyone talks about.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing anything about like Nintendo Power for it or anything quite like that. It's just different. But yeah, just that town song, just like the way it just kind of, I don't know, sings itself. It's pretty neat. Now, the one thing about this is these are all levels. And like I said, you have 15 total saves. Like, you can save the game 15 times. And that's, like, pretty much it.
So
you have four different save slots.
Uh-huh.
So you can, you know, you could save at different stages. That way, if you make a mistake, you can go back. Because there are things that you can, like, miss. And they'll prevent you from completing the game because you just didn't get that thing.
Mm.
So that always kind of sucks.
Oh, wow. Here's a bunch of spells. Now, I can select. I don't just get one at a time. I can buy these and they don't replace my fireball.
You can buy it. The good idea is to buy them all now. The best one's going to be lightning. The best spell for this, like, for attack.
Okay, here it is. Lightning.
But there are, you know, there's monsters with weaknesses. That's for sure.
I've always been a fan of electricity-based powers. I always like things like arcing between enemies and stuff like that.
Whoa.
What's going on?
Some guy attacking you?
This guy's attacking me.
Yeah,
I'm going to go to the wilderness.
Okay, so this is the first, like real area. So there's a lot going on here.
So why are these guys attacking me?
They're just evil. They're corrupted. If you see your attacks kind of bounce off somebody, that usually means they're not working. But before you go too far, put your sunglasses on. Then the guy you just killed at the beginning, he wasn't going to attack you. But if you do attack somebody, kind of like in Fallout or Skyrim or something, they'll attack you. But the sunglasses cut your water consumption in half. That's what they do. Yeah. So they're kind of those things that, like, you buy them once and that's their use. But you can buy as many pairs of sunglasses as you want, I think.
Okay. So my food is at 18%. That means...
You want to eat.
Means I want to eat. I guess you can't really see where you're at, like with your stats, unless you go into the menu.
Yeah, that's that limited HUD area. They definitely could have like put a line for that somewhere.
I'm hungry enough to eat two hams. I could go for a sip. I feel better. So there's no jumping, just like crouching spells.
Yep. Items
I probably shouldn't have shot that guy. Oh no, this guy might be tough.
Yeah, sometimes red. You typically, it really, because you can't tell the difference as long as they have a different color palette or something, if they're good or not. But like that wizard's a good guy, I'm pretty sure. Oh, and you're poisoned too.
Oh no!
And I don't remember how to get rid of that.
Oh, might just be.
But
doomed.
You can see that's what the venom.
Yeah,
stat.
That's at 60%. Let me, if I go back in the menu, oh, it stayed the same.
Now your mana like recharges over time too, but there's yeah, you're seeing that sparkly thing.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's something you can do with that, and that's how you can make magic to interact with that thing. I'm pretty sure.
My spells don't seem to be doing much against this guy.
Do you have the lightning spell?
Yeah, I do.
Is it at 4?
No.
Try switching it to 4.
Okay. Oh, no! It just, like, melted into this lump of dirt. that's an interesting game. It seems like very... You know, there's a lot of things you'd sort of have to figure out about it to really get into it. It's just, it's interesting.
Yeah, it's a game that, if you had the manual, a lot more stuff makes sense. It's a lot of I've stuff done with it came through just years of just playing around with it, just trying things out. But like, and they don't make it easy for you. There's a part, there's a well in that level you can go down, and that's where you can get like, a couple scrolls for more magic. But then you have to get out of the well, and the way you do that is by floating. And there's a levitate spell. But if you don't have enough mana to learn the spell and to do it, because when you do make the runes to make your own spell, it costs mana. Mm. And if you don't have any, then you're kind of screwed. And then you kind of just waste away until it comes out. And you float up, but then you have to, there's like another item you have to use to make yourself weightless. And it's like, it just throws everything at you. And I don't remember reading about it in Nintendo Powers, like old issues or anything like that. So I don't know.
It's definitely unique for sure.
Yeah. It's a game you got to sit down and figure out, but it's definitely not a quick game to play at all.
I'm going to boot up Mickey Mousecapade here briefly because this was one of the very few games I had as a kid that I have never rebought, and I remember just not understanding it at all. And oh my gosh, this is looking so familiar. I mean, I just remember it being really bad. Didn't understand what I was doing.
Your childhood memories are correct.
I've never heard anyone say, oh, this game is actually not that bad. I've never heard anyone say that.
No one's ever defended the Mickey Mousecapade.
Oh.
I don't know what it is. It just, something about it strikes me as like, makes me think it should have been a Master System game. I don't know if it's
not
just...
Not if there's anything wrong with that.
No, it kind of reminds me... I guess maybe it's a graphical look thing.
Yeah,
it kind of looks like it should have been like flicky or something like that. Like that kind of art style.
Yeah, there is a look to Master System games for sure.
Yeah. When any game that has a lot of saturated colors, I think. I kind of think more of... Because I think the Master System had...
It has that good yellow.
Yeah, it does. it has a lot more rich colors. And I don't know, that green is just... It's Game Dave's the only one who can have green walls and get away with it.
Oh, I got a key. Well, look at that. Look at that cat up there. Do I want to go to where the key was, or do I want to... I want to go fight that cat. I think I'll try to go down to that key.
Legacy of the Wizard is good. I like that game.
That's a game I should probably get someday.
I'm pretty sure I've got it. I think. As I was telling you earlier how I bought Super Mario Brothers Deluxe when I already had it. I was sitting there looking at it at that flea market like, yeah, I don't have Super Mario Brothers Deluxe. Because what happened, when I bought Wario Land 3 off eBay, somebody sent me Mario Brothers Deluxe. So I was like, oh, hey, you sent me the wrong game. Can I just send it back to you? And they did. And they like refunded me. Like they reset me on PayPal like half of the cost of the game. So I got Wario Land 3 for like $4 or something. And took it just a couple more days. So I was thinking there that like, oh no, I don't have Super Mario Brothers Deluxe because a year ago this thing happened. No, I bought it at too many games.
So I don't understand. I thought I got that key, but that key door won't open.
I don't know, but it's like really incessant. It's just like key, key, key. couldn't it have just said locked? Wouldn't that? I don't know.
I mean, NES, you know, limited text. Reckon they did the best they could.
I don't know. When they come up with games that, you know, they say like, oh, there's limited text, limited, you know, characters you can put in a line of information.
Magician.
Games like Magician, but like Dragon Warrior, like all the spells had full names.
Yeah.
Like Dragon Warrior 4, Mother, the translation of that had full names for everything. You know, they weren't. But then you go to like on the PlayStation and you had like Dragon Warrior 7, and it's like the world dew or something, because they couldn't fit Yggdrasil leaf or something in it, and everything had those like weird intercapped names and all that crap, you know. We've all seen it. And then you got games like Rockboard that just, you know, their translations changed everything. You got the fire card, whatever that whatever it was when we played that.
Yeah, you know, I was playing Dragon Warrior 4 a few weeks ago.
And yeah, I was sitting at the airport leaving MAGFest watching you play it the MacBoggery stream. Yeah.
And I got this sword called the Sword of Malice.
Yes.
And I'm like, oh, I don't feel like dealing with a cursed weapon right now.
It's not.
It was. I like sold it. I'm like, oh, this is worth a lot of money.
No, that's the best. That's the best way to make Chapter 4 easier is when you're Taloon and you're running the weapon shop.
Mm-hmm.
You wait until somebody sells you the Sword of Malice, because anything they sell becomes available for you to buy in the shop. So you let somebody sell it to you, then you save enough money to buy it, and That makes that chapter just so much easier. But it also, you can use it as a weapon, and it summons thunderbolts. You know, it casts zap, basically.
Yeah.
I forget what the real name. I think it's like the ruinous. No, it's not the ruinous sword. I forget what the DS version calls. But they make it a lot more apparent that it's not a cursed sword.
Yeah.
The Sword of Malice. That was what I thought the first time I played it. For sure, it was like, oh man, I've got one dude in a cure slime, you know, I don't I ain't cursing this Ragnar's mustache.
Yeah,
wouldn't do any good.
To be honest, I've never really had that great of a concept of what curse even does, other than you just can't remove it. But is it,
I've you always can't been remove paranoid it, there's something it, sometimes else. It prevents you from acting.
And it does in some
of the games. I don't know about four, but like in 8, if you equip the Ruinous Shield, it makes it look like your defense goes up, but it actually makes your defense like go to 1 or something. And that ain't good. Speaking of Dragon Quest 8, I am done with 2 Dragovian Trials. And I've been playing the second post-game dungeon or whatever at 63 hours in. And I'm at that point where it is very hard, because there are 2 new dungeons in it. The one you access right after after the Black Citadel shows up, right after those story events, and it's a good dungeon. There's it's basically the Dark Ruins again, but a little bit harder. But there's a lot of good like spoils in it. There's a lot of good stuff to get. The boss is insanely difficult at the end of it, but they tie it into the story, so it's like an expansion of the actual game story.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second dungeon, the new dungeon, it's not really a dungeon. It's more like a boss rush. After you beat the Dragovian stuff, after you beat the game the first time, you normally you get those list of things, rewards you can choose. Mm-hmm. So you can get like a legendary monster, so you can get the Metal King slime for your team, which has never done very well on my monster team. Or the Dragovian equipment, but after you beat it the first time, you get an option called an unparalleled training ground. And where Marta's Cottage is where they put this special, like, they call it Memory Lane. And you go through it, you fight all these monsters that you fought before, and they are like 70 times more difficult. So like Geezer, the first boss of Dragon Quest VIII, becomes Geezer in Memoriam. And he does about 400 damage a hit.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so I was like level 50, I think, when I beat him. And then right now I'm on Trap Box in Memoriam. They don't put Calamari in there because he's too big, but the Tortured Soul was difficult because he acts like two or three times a turn, and he buffs the Skeleton and Zombie to where they're doing like 400 damage each, and of course they each get a turn. But they do let you, it does treat it as a world map area, which, so since they have the two new party members, you can, if all four of your main people die, the other two people will come in if they're there. But if you go into a dungeon or something, it only brings the four characters you put in the lineup in that order with you. So which is kind of how they do, you know, any game with a wagon. Technically, you do have a wagon in this one, so they do it like that, and it's an interesting mechanic. It's a damn good port, though. I'm very, very happy with it.
You know, I felt like I had beaten that level when I was a kid. Now, I mean, seeing the end of that level and everything, I remember the witch. But now that I'm at the sea level, I'm like, this doesn't look familiar.
Well, and it looks complete. This looks like the second level of Adventure Island. You know?
Yeah. This looks like this. The art style here is more like Coleco or something to me.
Yeah. It definitely doesn't. Like, if you were to compare these two levels side by side, it almost looks like this is a sequel.
Yeah. Or the previous game, rather. You know what? This is nowhere near as bad as I remembered it being. This is actually not that bad. I feel like.
Meh. I don't know.
I mean, maybe it's an expectations thing.
Maybe.
I'm just like, have no expectations. I'm like, oh, it's not as bad as I remember it being as a kid.
You gotta kill that alligator. Get your alligator Mickey shoes.
That was like a really short level.
In terms of like cartoon games or whatever that I remember as a kid, the Tiny Toons game that is like the 3-on-3 sports stuff, like you play basketball. It was on the Genesis, I think. I played a ROM of it the other day, and I was like, oh wow, I always did suck at this game, but I remember really liking it, and it looks really good. I mean, like graphically, it's definitely a very impressive game. But I never cared for the Tiny Toons NES or, you know, 16-bit games where you're Buster and you're collecting carrots and running around. I don't know what it was. I just felt cheap to me, even though, like, there was nothing wrong with it. It's a fine game normally. But I was just kind of like, I felt uninspired.
I feel like I must have gotten this far as a kid, because I remember... Like, you know, that sent you back to the beginning of the level, and I just remember being like, what?
That's just cheap. I would go in a loop as if I was a kid. I would not understand.
Yeah.
I thought, you know, that's the start of the next screen, not the start of the level.
Miracle Piano Teaching System?
Oh, yeah, that's that big thing you can plug in. It's an actual, like, keyboard. And it's got, like, software for it.
I don't think I knew about that.
Oh, yeah.
Let's see. Let's go to another folder.
I remember when I was editing the Video Game Years episode of whatever year Mylon Secret Castle came out, and I had the Mylon Secret Castle segment.
Ah.
And I captured all the footage for it. And I'm sitting there like, I was looking up walkthrough after walkthrough, like, how do I play this game? Panic Restaurant is awesome.
Oh, yeah?
I love Panic Restaurant. That's another one of those expensive games.
Really?
Well, it's fun as hell. And I also saw, you know, got a little Princess Tomato and Salad Kingdom action in that folder. That's another Duke staple.
Yeah, that's a game that I do want to get.
So do I. I need to get a physical copy of it. It's on the Wii, you know, eShop thing, but you know, it don't look that good, as you've pointed out.
Yeah.
This game is just nuts, because you're just... When I used to do videos for Classic Game Room Undertow, I did this game, and I sung in it.
this guy took my restaurant.
Yeah, that's how business works. If you drop a pumpkin on somebody's head, some Waluigi wannabe can come in there and take your restaurant. And just does a lot of crazy stuff with it. But the bosses in this game are hilarious. I think the first boss is like a microwave that like throws out like chicken, and then there's like a giant hamburger and stuff. It's really neat.
I was unaware of this guy. How much is it?
I'm not sure now, but I'm gonna check. eBay Panic Restaurant. Let's see. $400?
Holy crap!
I mean, yeah, I didn't know. I figured it'd be like $100, $150.
Holy crap! Is there a less expensive Japanese version?
Let's see, Panic.
I don't know what it's called.
I was gonna say Panic Restaurant Famicom. Wapakoneku no Gourmet World is about $100.
Huh.
That's just the top result. There's ones for 50 or something.
Oh.
But let's see. There are a lot of if I did not read the description of this eBay listing, I would have thought this $30 one was legit because it looks it, but it's a repro card.
Oh.
So you get a repro of it for $30. But that's troubling. There's just, some of those are just looking too real. Like, oh yeah, I've, like Little Samson, $55, what the heck? And then you scroll down, it's like...
Oh, man, this boss is hard.
Yeah, at the very bottom of this Little Samson listing, it says reproduction game. And it's like hidden under all this other stuff about what kind of shipping you can get and about the game and stuff. It's like, no, it's supposed to be an $800 game.
Well, I don't want to do the whole level again, but that seems really good. Let's see here. Oh, you know what I want to try? Let me go back to the previous folder. A game I've been curious about is Kabuki Quantum Warrior.
Kabuki? I know what Kabuki Theater is.
Yeah, this is a HAL game.
Oh, you know it's good.
Yeah.
A Human Creative Group. Those are the same guys that made Clock Tower? Or those just Human Entertainment, I think. Something like that.
I don't know the name of the Clock Tower people. You got your little Shantae hair attack in this game.
Oh, I've seen this. Yeah. I didn't know. I know this game. I think this is a game I've probably played when I was like loading up random ROMs just to see what they were.
Mm-hmm. The annoying thing is like he's got this like long range hair attack, and then you like crouch and you're just like, yeah, I'm gonna punch instead. Can I grab like that platform?
Kind of got a Ninja Gaiden feel.
Yeah. Definitely not as refined, at least not as refined as the later. Whoa. Do a little cool little flippy on those things.
A little flippy.
You do a little wall grabbing, wall climbing.
I'm starting to feel a little Ninja Gaiden ripoff here.
It feels like a hair too
fast. Are you in a computer? I think that's what I got out of that little intro thing with all that Matrix sex going around. And there's all these little... Those are the FPGAs in the background of the Analog NT.
I'm a Kabuki. I'm a Quantum Warrior.
Those words don't make sense in that order to me. So speaking of repros, someone pointed out in the chat that they are very misleading these days.
Yeah.
When we were at MAGFest, there was a guy selling all these Game Boy and Game Boy Advance games, and they all had, as he put it, new labels. But they were like really stretched out. They were the wrong artwork. They didn't look anywhere right. And I was like,
who was selling those?
So it was somebody in one of the far away tables like I had not seen most of the day until like I think Friday or Saturday I think. There was somebody that just didn't stand out very much, but they had a lot of stuff. But he had this like a lot of stuff all weekend, so I don't think he sold a lot. But you know, he was like, yeah, they're all new and all this stuff. Only one of them's not real, and it was The Legend of Zelda: Oracle of Seasons. Had a very small board in it that you could see. He's like, that one's a repro. And I'm like, maybe you're just telling me that because I can actually see the board in it. Like, these other ones just don't, I can't take your word on the authenticity of these things when they've got quote-unquote new labels, but they're clearly shoddy print jobs. I'm not paying $30 for Castlevania when I can't even tell if it's real.
Yeah.
I don't even know if that game's worth that much, but still.
This game seems good, but like just something about the movement is like
it looks like it probably feels a little stiffy.
Well, it's more a little squirrely than stiffy, I'd say.
That boss has got a lot of attacks for a first level boss. I don't know. So Shark Bear Gator says that big virus is about to launch nukes, so you go into a weird machine that digitizes you into a computer to kill the virus. Also, you take the form of your grandfather, who was a kabuki actor. That sounds both good enough to be the actual story and dumb enough to be something he just made up. I can't tell. I love the difference. So Code Lyoko before Code Lyoko. That warms my heart to know. Every time I say something about that show, people are like, oh, what's that? I've never heard of it. I'm like, I don't know. It was a show on TV. They go into the computer, and there's some woman, there's a Siri in there that they talk to, and they're like, oh, it sounds terrible. And I'm like, I liked it. But everybody else says it's terrible who does know what it is. So I'm like, I don't know. I was a kid when I watched it.
But yeah, speaking of, what's the Japanese name for this?
For this game?
No. I'm trying to think of what of Hammer and Harry. What's the Japanese name of Hammer and Harry? It's something Densetsu.
Hammer and Harry.
Yeah. Because that is a game that I was looking on eBay for, and I was like, that looks like a repro because something about the artwork on it just looks a little off to me.
Is it Daiko no Gensan?
Oh.
Something like that?
That sounds familiar. Daiko. Daiko no Gensan. And then there's a sequel. Yeah, let's try this. I think that's it. Yeah, this is a game I want. I think it's that expensive. The PAL version is expensive. It never came out here. But I want to say that it's not that bad. Like, I think you can get from like 30 maybe.
For the Famicom version?
Yeah. I think so. Mm-hmm. What was that game that the Dave did a video on? It was called the three. He called it the three-eyed one, but that's not what the
Japanese. On Famicorner?
Yeah, it looked really good.
I can't remember. It's, they've got so many complicated names. All those Japanese words together. Yeah, like Niketsu Kakutu Densetsu. Like, I struggle with all that. I don't know. He had that Crazy Climber episode on the Famicom, and then I found that at an arcade bar a couple months ago, and it is hard. And I can only imagine that it's even harder trying to wrap your head around holding your Famicom controllers vertical or whatever he had to do.
There was a voice sample.
NES had some actually fairly impressive voice samples for some stuff.
I threw one of those. The
game you were thinking of for Dave was Mitsume Gatoru, yeah. The three-eyed one.
Okay, that sounds familiar. How did I? Oh, there we go.
Oh, wow, I heard that one through your microphone. So as you know, I pre-ordered one of those Framey Meesters.
Yeah.
Couple weeks ago, so now I'm trying to figure out exactly how I'm gonna hook everything up and what I'm gonna do, because it's gonna be a lot of S video for me and for some stuff, and then component for what I can do that with, because I'm thinking that's what I'm gonna do with my Nintendo 64, because I don't have it enough to do anything else to it that I would want to spend that much money on, but getting some S video for it would probably be good enough.
just be warned. There are, I've never run across this. I think Corey has. But supposedly there are S-Video cables out there, some of the cheap ones, that it's actually just composite video going down S-Video cable.
I've heard of that kind of stuff, not necessarily for the N64's case.
Some people say that, you have to get the Monster cables or the official Nintendo cables. It's not necessarily true. I've got lots of dirt cheap, thin cable S-Video cables for Super Nintendo that work as good as all the others.
Yeah, so I need to take it apart to see if it's a one chip or not. But my Super Nintendo is yellow, so I'm thinking it's not. But I have been eyeballing the minis, because that is a system that if I'm going to get it looking nice, I want to make sure I do it right. But the Super Nintendo I have is the Super Nintendo I've had forever. It's the only one I've ever owned, we probably would have got it in like 95, 96. So I'm kind of wondering, maybe it is pretty good. I don't know. Maybe, maybe it's not as yellow as you typically see a Super Nintendo being yellow. So maybe I'm lucky. We'll have to see. I need to rip her open, take a gander.
So, okay, that was called, what was it?
Mitsume Gatoru.
Mitsume Gatoru. I think it was based on a manga or an anime or something.
I think so, yeah.
But, you'd be surprised, the, let's just go for it. The default was easy, so let's go with it. there was, Ian, is that like a naked troll? That feels like one of the random things Dave would have pointed out, and I just can't quite remember. Um, We discovered at I had no idea that the Japanese version of Shatterhand is based on a manga.
Really?
Yeah, and or not a manga. I don't know why I said manga. I think like a tokusatsu style show.
I do believe the gentleman behind this little doohickey that you're playing is joined us in the chat.
Oh, is that so?
I believe so.
Oh, Kentris, he's here. Excellent.
So you can stop talking crap about it, man. you've gone through what, 5 or 6? You know, just kind of random grab 'em games and. I don't know, Magician had all 3 frames of those animations, so yeah. I'd say it looks pretty damn good.
Yeah. This is going great. This is awesome.
Kind of, I got my little RetroPie, and I thought that'd be all good and dandy, you know. Got my little emulator box until you were like, well, the shimmer's really bad.
Yeah.
And since that day in Corey's house, when I hooked that thing up and you said that, I'm like, I can't unsee it.
I feel cautious about talking about it, because I'm like, I'm going to ruin stuff for people when I talk about it.
But it proved to me that even though it was supposed to be as an authentic experience as I could try to get, there is no real way around it.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, and now I notice it, and I'm like, and it is bad in some cases, because I'm like, you know, like a real game should look like this. So I, you know, and I want to always make sure that my show like looks as good as possible, and emulation was always the way to do it. But now it's just like, I don't know, I want that real, like, authentic experience. And you kind of run into a lot of issues when you try to, like, the video output of a retro. Or a Raspberry Pi, like depending on your TV's EDID information can get really weird. So you have to like actually hard code in the command line the resolution you want it to output, and sometimes that's not right because the scaling won't work right.
Look at this parallax and shadow action. This like
that's
transparent. I don't even like. I want to say fake transparency, but like, how are they doing that? This actually looks like the best parallax I have seen on NES. And not just that, it's got this, like, transparency. What is going on?
It's witchcraft. Pretty sure the Famicom had some witchcraft going on with it. How many sprites were each individual? Those like little coins that just popped up when you killed that tower guy. I mean, there was no flicker there, at least not that I saw.
How do I jump up there? I don't seem to have a double jump.
Oh, game over, man. Better call Dave.
Oh, wait. I have some sort of magic spear that I can jump on. Okay.
When all else fails, Mega Man magnetic thing that, whatever that item was.
I cannot freaking believe this background here. It's like, I don't know, I know there's some more fake parallax on, well, I say fake parallax, I don't know, that looks like legit parallax.
I mean, it pretty much is. I mean, the only thing they're missing to make it like the super fancy parallax that you see a lot of people go nuts for is like having like another layer in front of it. Like if there were stalactites in front of the background, but behind the foreground, that would be too much for me.
There's a game on here called New York Yankees.
I have a feeling I've heard Dave say that before.
New York Yankees? Is this like a cat baseball game? I gotta load this up.
The only way you know now is you gotta check it out.
Yankees. It's got passwords. Yeah, okay, there's definitely cats involved. Oh, this is Rockin' Cats! This is Rockin' Cats!
Oh, wow.
Which I can't remember if I've played before. I know,
well, that would explain why I've heard that.
Because
Dave did a video on Rockin' Cats.
Dave is a Rockin' Cats fan.
He's a Rockin' Cat himself.
Whoa, look at the swinging action.
This is the second game you've played with a punching, like, attack that's like this glove thing.
Yeah, with a cat.
Yeah. You had Felix earlier, now you got Rockin' Cats. All you need to do now is play like TNC Surf Design and you pretty much will become Game Day. Oh, Coca-Cola. That's my favorite.
And why beer? Oh, I wonder what that says in the American version. And why beer?
Probably New York soda.
Yep. Cola.
How they, like, you know, and like, Harvest Moon, everybody was getting drunk off juice.
Yeah,
juice. That is something I'll be looking forward to. Even, you know, whether it's composite cleaned up through the Framemeister S-Video, whichever, but like playing Harvest Moon 64 again on my actual 64 on a television that won't make it look like junk, you know, is going to be looking good because I'm pretty sure my save file still works on it. And I've kept playing that game like years after it ends because you can just keep going or whatever. So I'm like year 9 or something. It's like my kid's still a baby and all that crap. No, that was my favorite Harvest Moon until Stardew Valley came out.
Oh, nice. Kevtra says that he is fairly sure he fixed the FDS audio. Do you know when that fix might be getting pushed through?
When he goddamn feels like it. I do like a Harvest Moon: A Wonderful Life. I think that's probably my favorite Harvest Moon. It's been a while since I've like really played through it. When I hacked up my Wii U to do Nintendo, that was my like first test game because it's got a lot of like neat textures and stuff just to kind of see how it looked. But I think on the PlayStation 2 is when there was the Another Wonderful Life. I don't think that the girl version of the game came out on the GameCube, but the GameCube will always be like what I think of with the Harvest Moon: A Wonderful Life. But I also really like Return to Nature or Back to Nature on the PlayStation, which was like the reimagining of the 64 version or something like that. I like 64 more, but I like the story, if you will, in the town in Back to Nature a lot more.
I've never heard of this game, but it's called Pizza Pops. So I'm going to play it because it's called Pizza Pops.
It looks, are you delivering the pizza, you think? Like, A, he needs a box around it because that's just gross. He's just manhandling this pizza delivery. And your box is the weapon. Why isn't the pizza in the box?
I don't think I've successfully hit anything.
I know.
The hit detection seems very weird.
These cats are like Pac-Man 2 cats. Like, they're sleeping and then they like maul you as soon as they see you.
Okay, I hit the cat. This is a good-looking game, but, like...
I don't know. There's too much of that yellow in it.
Oh, wow, look at this. You don't see, like, you know, teetering on the edge animations on the NES very much.
No, I think the first time I ever saw an animation like that was Sonic.
Yeah, that's... I don't know if I knew at the time that Sonic had that, because I didn't play a lot of Sonic, but...
Oh, I ended every level you could on the top of that capsule, trying to do the falling off animation with Sonic.
I think Donkey Kong Country was like my first like major exposure to that.
Yeah.
I like the style of this game, but it does not seem to play very well.
Yeah, kind of. I don't know. It seems kind of. There's something wrong with it, you know, just like the fact that you can't reliably kill anything.
Yeah. You know what I'd like to see? I'd like to see Sayuki World 2, which is the Japanese version of Wampum, which I have, which is like a Native American theme, but this is like a Monkey King theme.
When you said Hammer and Harry, I thought you were talking about Wampum because of Hammer, and you womp things with a hammer.
Wampum is a very different game.
Yeah. Now,
this is all part of the big, complicated Wonder Boy mess.
Oh, yeah.
This is... Sayuki World is a sort of alternate port of... It's like a... one of those reskinned ports of Wonder Boy and Monster Land.
Mm-hmm.
And this is a sequel to that, that there is no equivalent to this game in, you know... Monster World. So it's a sequel to a port of Monster Land that,
which is how Adventure Island was, because that was Wonder Boy, and then they made Adventure Island 2.
Mm-hmm.
Or
But those games don't have like an equivalent Wonder Boy version.
Right.
Yeah, so kind of the same deal here.
So we kind of had like a three-way Wonder Boy split kind of happening.
Yeah, this is basically the exact same game, but the main character looks very slightly different. But he's got the same like face that he makes when he gets hit.
It looks good.
Yeah, it's the same game. It's pretty good. It's pretty good. Are there any Famicom games that you think I should try out?
I'm still kind of learning the Famicom library. Moon Crystals. I've played the translation of that. That's a lot of fun.
Oh yeah. Is that? Do I need to load up the translation for that? Or
probably a patch ROM if he's got it in there.
Yeah, it's probably in here. That's a pretty expensive game, I think.
I think so. Let's check out the old eBay here.
What's Mickey Mouse 3? Yumi Fusum.
I searched Moon Crystal eBay and I got a bunch of Sailor Moon results.
I think it's like at least $100. You mustn't go out during a full moon. That's when the dead walk the woods. Do I have an English translation of Lagrange Point? I've never played that, but it's probably on here. All of these files I just copied off of Corey's EverDrive. I will look for that.
What is Lagrange Point?
That is, I believe it uses one of the expansion audio chips, and I think that's why it's famous. But I don't know much about it.
So it looks like... Moon Crystal, like a legit. The only one I'm seeing on eBay are boxed copies, and one is $461. Buy it now, but you can get a repro of it for $40.
The story looks nice, but I'll skip it. Man, the graphics in this are like super good, though.
Oh yeah, this is a fun game. It's got a good translation too.
Yeah, like these like cutscene graphics are like amazing.
Like the lighting, like I know it's just sprites changing and stuff, but it's like it's nice and dynamic.
Look at this like turnaround animation. Oh, there's like so many frames here. Kevtris, how would I, if I were in the, you know, I'm in the jailbreak NES core where I can launch the ROMs, how can I activate expansion audio while I'm in here? Because I think I have to exit this whole core to do that. Do I just have to save that in the menu to do that? I don't know which chip Lagrange Point uses. Or mapper or whatever. Yeah, this is pretty great.
It's a good game.
So why? That's actually something I've been wondering. Like, I don't quite understand why it can't do that, like with the regular firmware. Because I have been wondering. Like, I'm like, the NES can understand. Like, there, the NES just does it. Is there a reason for that? Yeah, I guess there has to be a reason. But I've just been curious. If you want to get to the menu, you hit start in the file browser. But, well, I'll like, back out of the whole game, right?
Oops. You're starting to get a little frame droppy, I think, even though I'm still watching in 144p.
Yeah, looks like I'm... And bad frame.
There's a little too many frames in that turnaround animation in Moon Crystal. You know what Famicom game I really like? Kokoron.
Oh,
it's you like make your own character based on like all these different parts.
Oh yeah, that's right. That was old Jimmy Hoppe and Dave were talking to me about that game.
Yeah, it is a good, it is an easy game. But it is a good game.
Yeah, I'd like to. I should try that. I'll try Lagrange Point, and then I'll try that. Yeah, this seems really good. I just wish it wasn't so expensive. NES Core knows which chip the ROM uses because it's in the .NES header. It's impossible to know on the high def. Because the cartridge has no real distinguishing features to check. Gotcha. Okay, that makes sense. Is there like a like I haven't really observed a downside to turning on like a unused audio expansion chip. Like it hasn't seemed like it sounded like any different. Like, is there a reason to not just activate all those at once? I mean, it doesn't save that they're turned on, so. Let's see. I don't see a translation for Lagrange Point in here, but I'll just play the... Just play the regular. Like I say, I that's a name that I hear, and I don't even really know what kind of game it is. So let's try it.
Are you using Restream today?
Yeah.
You think maybe that's why you're dropping, or?
I mean, it would be worse if I wasn't using Restream.
Hmm. I don't know. Seems fine now to me, at least.
All right, something in space, blah, blah. Yeah, I mean, I think it's, you know, like I said, when I streamed through Restream before, there were a couple of hitches over the course of the stream, but generally it was doing okay.
I already like the music of this game. And if it's the FM one, that's a good FM. I don't know. Anytime there's a FM, you know, or the enhanced audio of anything, I tend to think it sounds better. I know there are very few games where I'm like, hey, no, the PSG or whatever's the better way to listen to it. But I'd be hard pressed to actually name any of them.
Yeah, I mean, from the FM versus PSG I've heard for Master System, I've preferred the PSG, but my Master System experience is not extensive.
Yeah, I know. I think GameSack's new video had, they showed Shinobi and had examples of its PSG versus the FM one, and I think the FM is superior for that game at least. But yeah, my Master System experience is also very limited. It's limited to Alex Kidd in High Tech World. Hang on.
Oh, okay. This is I didn't realize this was an RPG, I guess.
So little chibi guys, little Ghostbusters 2 guys. Oh, this is Phantasy Star.
Oh, this is Phantasy Star.
It's a futuristic game where you are little people.
You're a little. You're not as tall and skinny as Phantasy Star.
Yeah, but it's got a nice Final Fantasy II intro where you get killed almost, yeah. And then you wake up. Yeah, this is.
I
do want to see a translation of this game. No, I've never heard of it before.
I did not know this was an RPG. I had not know this. I knew the name, but I had no idea it was an RPG.
It's got portrait character art. It is Final Fantasy II. Yeah. It's when you see games like this that where, and I know like all the Dragon Quest games came out in the 80s, I think, for the Famicom, mm-hmm. but like they all pretty much looked the same except for the first one, of course. But you know, you look at this, and it's just like, wow, you can do a lot with the hardware, mm-hmm. and it's, you know,
is I want to say this is a pretty expensive game.
I used to think that all Famicom games were like dirt cheap or something. They like paved the roads with them in Japan, but I guess not.
Oh man, a road paved with Famicom carts, that would be
I mean, Dave's heaven, I think. There wouldn't be no so Fami corner.
I sure
be
don't
a
know
Fami
what's going on here, but I am impressed. No, I did not want to say for him. Let's see, what did I say? Oh, I was going to try that Cucarone. Is that a C or a K?
It is a C.
There it is.
This is one of those games that it is super easy, but it kind of depends on how hard you make it for yourself. Because you design your characters.
Yeah. I mean, it's kind of like Kirby. Like, sometimes the powers are more difficult to use, but
yeah.
It's more fun to use them. Well, look at that.
It had a multi-creative team. I mean, that's just, you know, it's quality.
Yeah. Multiple creative things going on with this game.
That guy always creeped me out, though. Little, you know, elephant umbrella dude. Mary Poppins his way into your game. Sits right on top of your house.
Oh, he looks like a drowsy.
Yeah, I was trying to remember my Pokemon. I was like, I can't remember what that is.
Well, look at that very.
Oh yeah, there's a translation for this game too, but you don't really need it. But you make your own characters, and then you pick a level, and then you gotta go backwards through the level. And if you pick a level that's like on the opposite side of something else, you go through another level on your way there. So, you know, you really get a different experience depending on the order of which you play the stages. So they kind of blend into each other in a way. It is really neat.
I feel like I've heard this music before. I'm torn between Ninja Head and Dragon Head.
Well, you can see the stats. So there's like, I think, health and power, maybe.
Oh, whoa! What's going on when I hit left and right? There's like more heads.
There's more heads for
the same stat.
Yeah, you can pick. You really can customize them.
Oh wow. Okay, well, I'm not going to worry about too much about stats. I'm just going to get what I want.
Yeah. I think one of them's health and one of them's weight, actually.
Oh, that makes sense.
Because if you weigh more, you can't jump as quickly or move as quickly.
There's some good choices. I think I'm going to go with Dragon Head.
It's a good choice. The question mark ones are always weird.
Oh, dragon with a jetpack.
Well, I think you can already see kind of why I like this game so much.
There's dragon with some sort of... dragon with wheels.
Oh. Yeah, I think the wheels, I think you're really fast with the wheels. Now, so what's cool about this is...
I gotta go dragon with jetpack, I think.
What's cool about this is you eventually get... you get to make another character. I think you get to make three altogether.
Oh,
so,
wow.
And then you'll get to pick which one you want to use. These, you can't really tell what the different weapons are, but that's the third thing you pick. Unless you play the translation, so I can't remember which is which.
I don't know how to get out of my name entry screen.
I think just hit the blank area.
I did it somehow. Okay. Here we go.
But I love the music in this game. It's just got that bright, you know, charmy feel to it.
So, and it's cool that they let you like test drive your character before you start playing.
So you can see how it works. But yeah, and the jetpack actually works and stuff. I mean, the vehicle, look at this world map. It's just got that garish pink and white polka dot background for a lot of things.
I want to go the space whale here.
Yeah, so if you were to go from the space whale to the milk pirate ship level, you would go backwards from the space whale level all the way through. You would play a level of the house area, and then you would go to the pirate level. All in one, like, trip. So it is really neat how they kind of, like, customize that depending on your route.
Who made this?
I forget. Let me find out. It was made by, Tekaru? They were the same guys that made Little Samson.
Ah, okay. I always thought that was a Taito game, or at least they published it.
And I guess the jetpack and everything is from Astro Boy. So one of the heads is actually Astro Boy.
Ah, okay. Yeah, this game has great music.
Yeah, I guess there was a PC version that was being made, but never got finished. Our Hardcore Gaming 101 has an article on it.
Oh, okay.
You fight like the moon and crap like that. There's like a king somewhere. You fight him. It's nuts, but it is really cool. It's catchy as hell, I think. Yeah. But this was one of the first games I had emulator experience with as a kid. When I was 10, my uncle gave me a floppy disk with a bunch of Nintendo games on it, and the Nesticle emulator. So this was the year 2000, we had a Nintendo for very briefly when I was growing up, and. I think we had sold it or it got broken or something like that. So I was playing this before I even knew what a PlayStation was. But yeah, the computer I ran my first emulators on was an old Windows 95 machine with 1 gigabyte of hard drive space. So just enough for a couple NES games and an emulator.
This is fun. Pretty unique concept. Especially for its time.
Yeah, and you can it's a customizable experience in a way. I'm pretty sure that health system is exactly what it is in Little Samson too. It's been a while since I've played an emulated version of that.
Moon. How's that? That moon, I think, is more menacing looking than the Majora's Mask moon.
Yeah, that moon looks pissed.
Something about the curls in his lips just makes me think, oh my gosh.
It's a little too realistic, actually.
Yeah, it's horrifying.
I'll have to play the translation again to remember what exactly they're saying. But everybody, and they've got a crap ton of health. This is some Milky Way Wishes background stuff, though, with the stars going everywhere. Yeah, as you can tell, some weapons are better than others.
Yeah, this is... I don't think it's doing anything unless it splits.
Yeah, it did a little damage if you hit him directly with it, it looked like. One of them's like a baseball. There's a shuriken you can get. There's all sorts. There are some that I think are completely useless, but I can't remember what they are. Excuse me. Yeah, this was I think this is probably the first actual Famicom like exclusive game that I ever played when I was a kid. I think the only other ones that I've played out are ones I've heard about online. I've checked out a lot of the games Dave's talked about through an emulator, of course, because I don't have a Famicom or one of those fancy cart converters like you've got.
No, I mean, I've got the actual Famicom,
Yeah, I mean, you've got the AV Famicom, right?
Yeah. Oh, I gotta try to beat this moon. This moon's tough.
He's starting to get his pattern down, though. This is I think the shuriken is, the best weapon, because it flies
tore
straight.
Tore me up.
Yeah, he does a lot of damage one hit. Yeah, this game came out in 1991. For the Famicom.
I don't think it's that... It's not a particularly expensive one, though, I don't think.
I'm not sure.
I think it's pretty common, but I could be wrong. It looks like a game that would be expensive.
$35.
Not bad.
That seems about right. It's got a nice hot pink cartridge. And when I searched Kokoron... the other results that came up in Google Shopping are Ford Model T Kokoran Black Steel Rear Lamp. I guess that's a type of spotlight lens.
Okay.
Yeah, $35-$40 it looks like. You can get a complete, it looks like, for $84.
I need more.
It looks like a pack of bubble gum in the box, though. It's so pink.
Oh man, I need more. You can save here. I will not save though. But anyway, let's go back. Run cartridge. There's that Mario Brothers that's still in there. So yeah, that is it's pretty awesome.
It's definitely just a neat addition. I mean, the Analog NT Mini is, pretty much supposed to be like a real NES. in fancy form.
Yeah, know? Yeah. I mean,
but this capability offers, you know, because FPGAs are
configured to be like a real NES, but it can also just as easily be, well, maybe easily is not the word, but it can be configured to be all these other 8-bit systems, which is pretty mind-blowing. And
all through basically what is essentially like firmware updates. I mean, that's true of like any FPGA thing, right?
Just added cores.
Right.
I don't think additional firmware updates are needed to load the cores.
Yeah, I guess I'm just trying to think of like how, you know, because I don't know how FPGA actually like works, so the fancy thing is. But I imagine basically when Kevtris works his magic on any other features he wants to add to this little jailbreak of his, it's basically going to be you're just going to kind of send it a file or a command from a computer.
Yeah.
And bam, it's there.
Yeah, I mean, Kevtris, I will buy all of the cartridge adapters, I think. You know, I don't have a way to play Game Gear games, you know. I would absolutely start collecting Game Gear games if those
are cheap.
If I had an adapter for this system, I mean, there's so many. You know, I was saying, I think before you showed up in here, you know, I've got ColecoVision and Atari 2600and stuff like that, but they aren't, you know, the Atari isn't RGB modded yet, and I don't know if I'm really going to have room to have it like permanently implemented into the rest of my setup like my other RGB consoles.
I was gonna
say,
how often are you dying to play some Atari 2600 games? Yars' Revenge is good, but
I mean, I'm admittedly, you know, not a huge like Atari guy. I've got nostalgia for ColecoVision because my cousin had it, but you know, I'm not much of a pre 1985 guy, I will admit, but I've got some games for those systems, and it's just nice to be able to use them and use the cartridges.
Yeah, I mean, especially for something like Atari, there is just this. I mean, I did a video on the different cartridge designs of the 2600 or the V video, whatever they didn't call it when I didn't call it a number, the VSE or whatever. It's a fascinating part of history when you look at this kind of stuff, and to be able to plug something like that into an actual system and experience it the way it was meant to be,
and to get RGB 240p output from it.
Those solid colors can finally not be fuzzy.
Yeah, to play the cartridge for real, to play it on a CRT or on HDTV without having to have the trouble of, you know, RGB modding and hooking up some of these systems that again, you know,
my 40 years old or so. Yeah.
I mean, you know, my regulars, like my NES and all my Nintendo systems and PlayStation systems and Sega systems. And, you know, I just got a PC Engine, which I'm going to get RGB mod, you know, all that stuff I'm going to have hooked up in my setup, ready to go at any time. But some of these other things, like, it's just it's going to be so awesome to have that access to those games through this being jailbroken as it is. So I mean, it's crazy the possibilities that opens up, and I'm very excited about that aspect. And
and not having to be software emulated. I mean, because like Atari software emulation, there's something wrong with it. I don't know, it doesn't feel like it's correct.
Oh,
because it had like, you know, those like the dial controller. I mean, that was an analog input. Yeah. I mean, there was a certain finesse to it, and you just can't replicate that with a keyboard.
Marshall from who is the maker of the Ultra HDMI for N64 is also here. We've got basically the two top minds in retro game tech in the house.
Sounds like some video game collusion if I ever heard it.
Which we've got Marshall's 64, the new revision of his 64 drive, which we were originally going to do an episode that was like a bunch of flashcards. And then we decide, okay, it's going to be way too long, so let's make this first episode just ever drives. And then we're going to look at some other flash carts in an episode that I hope I can do either late February, or hopefully, I feel like almost certainly by sometime in March, we'll be looking at other flash carts, including Marshall's 64 drive. So,
I'd be into that.
Yep, very cool. I mean, we've got. It never ceases to amaze me. You know, I think to an outsider, they would think that retro game tech is. It is what it is, that's old stuff, but we are almost overwhelmed by the amount of new things that keep on happening, and all of these things that we need to get to, because it's like, someone sent us this thing and it's awesome, but someone also sent us this other thing and that's awesome too, and we gotta do an episode on that, and getting all of the different devices we need to do for a particular episode, and it's just retro games is happening stuff.
I think it's a testament to how the staying power of these things that some people grew up with, some people are rediscovering, some people are finding out for the first time. These games that are, there's so many different ones, there's so many different ways to play them. It's, we're the walls of access and quality of how you can do it are coming down. And I think that's just impressive in and of itself. But I think it's also a testament to the fact that these games are awesome and people love to play old school games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, I don't think we're not going to see this kind of stuff, I don't think, to the level it is with, the PlayStation 3, the Wii U, those types of consoles, can you upscale them to 8K or whatever it will be in 20 years? I don't know, maybe, but I think, 30 years from now, people are still going to be wanting to mod up their NES to get the best looking thing they can out of their virtual reality syringe ingest video system or whatever we're watching in 20, 30 years.
Yeah, no, it's crazy. But, I think, this kind of FPGA hardware, I really do see as being, this what we're looking at here is one of, I think, the first steps to, really being able to preserve the experience, into the future. I'm going to be using my original hardware for the systems that I can for as long as I can, but I think stuff like this is where it's going to have to go to preserve that experience as accurately as possible for as long into the future as possible.
And what's interesting about all this stuff, I mean, like, in your guys' NES RGB video, you mentioned the PlayChoice 10 and the PPU from that, and the fact that to get that into an NES to get through the Rico PPU on the NES to get RGB out of it or whatever. You had to gut a PlayChoice 10 machine.
Mm-hmm.
Now there are methods that you can mod the system to get that color palette if that is something you're interested in, but you don't have to take a machine apart. You don't have to ruin a PlayChoice 10 to get it, and you can still experience what that would have offered you.
Yeah, yeah. So it never ceases to amaze me. There's just all kinds of stuff going on. Yeah,
definitely.
All right, well, was that about do it for this week?
I mean, you're the host there.
I guess Corey ended up not stopping by, but...
I believe he was in the chat. He was keeping a tab on us.
Okay. All right, making sure we weren't being lewd or anything. But that's good stuff. I'm not sure what we'll... We'll be looking at next Sunday, but hopefully, fingers crossed, I hope that I can get an NT Mini episode out within 2 weeks from now. So hopefully we'll be...
You heard it here first.
So hopefully. That's not a promise. That's just me being optimistic here. I've already gathered a lot of material, but I'm still finishing working on the script. Which we're going to have people look over it, as we always do. We'll be doing this again, you know, I just kind of ended up doing this on whim. Well, really, Corey kind of encouraged me to, because I'm like, you know, I think you're letting me borrow your EverDrive. I think I'm just going to play a bunch of NES games. At first, I was going to just play on the NES because we don't like to spoil our episodes too much on the stream. And I kind of showed off the menu of this and some of the functionality. But yeah, you know, whatever. You know, but so we're basically going to have two NT mini streams within a few weeks of each other, most likely. But
hey, it's neat. Let's talk about it. I like it.
Yeah, go to the Atari Age forums to find Kevtris's thread about the jailbreak and how to do it. Super easy to do. I mean, you just put the firmware you want to install, the jailbreak firmware, on the SD card. You put it in. It takes your system like maybe 3 minutes to install it. Just blinks the light. If you want to install the official analog firmware, then you just put that on your SD card instead, and you know, it does the process. Analog actually told me that the system is designed to be unbrickable. So you don't got to worry about any dangers of, you know.
Do you guys remember the Titanic?
Swapping between the firmwares. So that's awesome. I'm obviously going to switch back to, after I test a few more things in here, probably, I'm going to switch back to the official firmware so that I can, capture stuff without the skull and crossbones on the menu for the video. And then when I get to that part of the video, then I will, you know, show this menu. But I want to look stock for the first part of the video. But we are going to tease early in the video that this is way more than an FPGA NES. This is... Mm-hmm.
This is more than the AVS.
Yeah, I mean, this is, you know, multi-core. You can load all these cores. So yeah, it is it's pretty crazy. It definitely changes, like I said earlier, changes the value proposition significantly, giving you access to all these systems. But anyway, thanks everyone for stopping by. Thanks, Duke, for joining us on Skype.
I'm always glad to help out, boys. Yeah. I don't know if Corey's still in the old chat there or not, but always glad to help out.
Yeah, thanks, Kevtris and Marshall, for stopping by, too. It's awesome to see you guys in the chat. And we'll see y'all next Sunday. Good night.
Good night.